This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Program Council, what it does, and how it works. You can also submit your own nomination to the Program Council. But hurry, voting for these positions happens in late February. Visit kpft.org for information on the Program Council. This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Polinsky.
This is Brian Levinka.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn Holt. And on this evening's show, HGLBTPC is the South's oldest gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender civil rights organization. Founded in 1975, the Houston GLBT Political Caucus is dedicated to eliminating prejudice, violence, and injustice against our community through education, activism, and political advocacy. HGLBTPC President Crid Banks will be joining us to discuss recent developments. Then we have news wrap from This Way Out, among other things in the news, looking at how the GLBT community is helping out with disaster relief for Haiti. Then at 9:40, we have a look at Fresh Start Community Haven, which is also just called Fresh Start, which is a place for GLBT youth who are either homeless or about to become homeless to find housing and community support. And at the top of our second hour, Queer Voices will explore the recent historic election of Mayor Anise Parker from the perspective of Houston's college-aged GLBT community with a roundtable discussion. We will have representatives from several Houston area college GLBT organizations to discuss their impressions of the election, as well as their views of the impact that it had on our community. Followed by our feature segments from This Way Out. And that's our show.
Well, and I'm looking forward to it. Actually, I was just thinking, we have a nice selection of local interview segments that I think will really reflect the community as much as we can. Today, of course, is Martin Luther King Day here in this country.
It is, but we need to say a shout-out to Jennifer, who's ill tonight. So it's an all-male show with Summer, of course. yes, Martin Luther King Day. I had to work, so I didn't get to see you in the parades. Jack, were you at the parade?
I was at the Black Heritage Parade. You know, Houston, we have two parades.
We have two parades, so I guess.
And that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. And the weather was fabulous today, to be out in a parade in January in Houston, Texas. In fact, I was thinking, boy, wouldn't this have been a great day to have an outdoor inaugural? But, you know, we always seem to have bad weather.
Well, you know, the city charter says, you know, have to have it on a certain date, and it was really cold.
Yes. In January, you can't always choose those dates. But that was a lot of fun, and I hope you listen to a lot of programming here on KPFT, because they did do a good job of covering a lot of the issues around Martin Luther King.
I was listening this afternoon, and I heard some excerpts from the I Have a Dream speech. So,
and you know, we're coming up to fundraising here at KPFT in next month, so I want you to be aware of that. It's very important to support this station, especially in these times when it's a little bit more difficult to keep the money coming in to keep the station on the air. As you know, most of us are volunteers, and we are very honored to be able to have a show like Queer Voices and be able to talk to the community.
When are we going to start hitting up people for?
In the second half of February.
Okay, so start saving up now.
Of course, you don't have to wait. You can go online at kpft.org and donate at any time. In fact, Scott was on earlier on the show just before us, our good friend Scott, who is an incredible donor every year to KPFT, probably for the past, we'll be celebrating our 40th year this year.
That's right, and there's some festivities planned. And so, you know, if you support the station, we're going to be asking you to support us in a few weeks. And, you know, I think we put out good programming.
And towards the end of, when is it, February, we're going to have a chance to hear some stuff from the Pacifica Archives.
Yes, we'll be off 1 week. in fundraising. So they'll be playing stuff out of the archives. And, you know, the archives, Pacific Archives is, I know they had some trouble during part of the time here at Pacifica, but they do have some incredible stuff there that is probably found nowhere else in the world. And, in fact, sometimes if you listen to radio documentaries, at the end they'll give credit to the Pacifica Archives. And especially if you look now on commercial radio where they're really not doing too much news at all, almost anywhere, especially here in Houston, the Pacifica Archives is going to become even more and more important.
Well, bear in mind that radio, after all, is an art. And a lot of what passes for radio on commercial stations these days is not art.
So we are artists, is what you're saying.
Well, I'm saying the Pacifica Archives probably, like Jack is saying, represents the best of radio, what radio really is.
You know, and it's a snapshot of time, too.
That's true.
So,
well, let's take a little break here and play some music that's selected by J.D. Doyle, and we'll be back with our first interview.
Specifically for Martin Luther King Day.
Yes, J.D., listen.
Moly from 2009, and I Have a Dream. This is Queer Voices.
You know, I think our whole community is basking in the afterglow of the election. And one of the most important, I think, political organizations in our community, the Houston GOBT Political Caucus, is here with President Chris Banks and Neil Valgu, the screening committee chairman. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Say hello, boys.
Hi.
Hi, Brian.
How are you? Say hello to Houston.
Hi, Houston.
Hi, Houston.
Gay Houston.
We
Gay
do
Houston.
Love this city.
Well, I hope, hopefully you love the station, too.
Of course.
For people, for our listeners that have no clue what the caucus is, what is the Houston GLBT Political Caucus?
Well, the caucus seeks to serve as the voice of the GLBT community in the political sphere, in the political realm. And that's both by advocating on issues and also with political organizing. And we organize and endorse candidates for office, and we're gearing up to do that right now. We came off a successful year last year. We endorsed Denise Parker in February, former president of this organization, and we were very excited to have her win in December. We were really happy to be a part of that effort.
Yeah, exciting on a global level, I think. Now, you said something about advocating and screening and endorsing. Can you tell us a little bit about that process for our listeners?
Sure. We're kicking off our screening process now, and I'll let Neil talk about that a little bit. But basically, the idea is that we want to endorse the candidates that are best for the community, that are best on our issues. And so we talk to them thoroughly, and I'll let Neil actually talk a little bit about how we're doing that.
Neil?
Well, thank you. And, you know, we've been really rigorous this campaign cycle because we do have a newfound, I think, position in the community, and people are looking to us more and more after Anissa's election for guidance on what it is that these candidates stand for. And we have so many candidates who are running in these judicial races that our job really does become important in this primary election.
Let's talk about this upcoming election that you're screening for, so we can kind of give a basis. What election is it, and who's running, and kind of what to expect?
Right now what we're doing is we are screening in the party primary elections. And those elections will be on March 2nd. And
March 2nd. Put it on your calendars, people.
That's right. And so it's the Democratic and Republican Party primaries. And so this is where the parties nominate the candidates that will go on to the general election in November. So this is sort of a round one of two.
Okay, so if you're a Democrat, you vote Democratic in this primary. Can you, like, vote anybody or just follow your ticket? Or how does that work?
Well, you can, when you go into a voting location, you'll be able to choose between a Republican voting station within your polling location and a Democratic. Mm-hmm. And you can choose to vote either Republican or Democrat. So when you receive your ballot, all the candidates on your ballot will be either Republican or Democrat.
Go ahead, Chris.
Just a little bit about kind of the state of the game right now. For more than 10 years, the Republicans have completely dominated office in Harris County. In 2008, however, most of the Democrats on the ballot won. What we're looking at right now, in the November election, most of the incumbents are Republicans who were not on the ballot last year. So the Democrats are really putting out a big effort because they see this as their opportunity. And, of course, the Republicans are also putting forth a big effort because they want to defend what they have.
So there's a lot of room at stake, or a lot of, I guess, quote-unquote, air-quote, power to be gained in this November election.
Yes, right, yeah. Of course, yes.
And especially with former Mayor White supposedly going to be, you know, at the top of the ticket for the governor's race, that will really put a lot of interest.
Yes.
That'll really put a lot of interest in Harris County, and will really, you know, help the down ballot Democratic candidates.
So, but before we get to there, we have to make sure that people pass the runoff or the primary stage.
That's right.
Get to the runoff. Mm-hmm. So, let's explore how do we get the right people on the endorsement cards for the caucus. How do we get to that point?
Well, we have sort of a two-pronged approach going right now. Because we have so many candidates that we're having to deal with, we've broken the process down into two separate approaches. The first is judicial candidates.
Okay.
We have received packets, and we have 62 Democratic candidates seeking 62 Democratic candidates seeking our endorsement.
And that's just for judge positions.
That's just for judicial positions.
So that says a lot about the endorsement of the caucus. It's very sought after and highly prized.
So we will be doing screenings of 62 candidates and a total of 29 races. And so that is really a large undertaking for an organization like ours. And so what we've done is we have set up 7 screening panels of 3 members each.
And who gets to be on the panels?
Well, we, for the past 3 months at our regular organizational meetings, we have asked for volunteers. And we got several volunteers. We've tried to make the panels, we've tried to make them as diverse as possible. We've tried to include some legal expertise on each panel. So we have 7 attorneys who will be handling that.
7 attorneys? Oh, man. That's crazy.
So,
but they have to be members of the caucus.
They are. Everyone is a member of the caucus. And these are all regularly participating people who, if you come to the meetings, you would clearly recognize them.
Now, do you disclose the kind of questions that you're going to ask, or is that kind of...
Actually, I brought the questionnaire with us this evening.
So listeners of Queer Voices can be privy to the,
yes,
the question.
And I thought this would be a great opportunity to go through and talk about some of the things that we're asking, because... What we've done is we completely rewrote the questionnaire this election cycle.
Why did you do that?
Well, the first is we wanted to be able to really probe the candidates on what their values were and what it was that they could bring to us as a GLBT community.
Rather than saying what they need to say to get the endorsement.
Exactly. And so one of the things that we had experienced in the past is a reluctance from judicial candidates to talk about issues that are important to us in a meaningful way, because they are restricted in some of the things that they can say. They can't make promises on how a certain case would come out.
Right.
So we completely rewrote the questionnaire, and we asked them not how they would rule in specific cases, but rather what the law was in specific areas. So we have an entire section where they have to explain the holding in several cases, and I can go through them.
Well, maybe the highlights.
Okay.
We don't want to lose our listeners.
Sure. So things like Lawrence v. Texas, which was a very important case for our community.
Yes. You know, everyone out there should know about Lawrence versus Texas.
Lawrence v. Texas was the Supreme Court case that struck down the sodomy statute in Texas.
Right. Kind of decriminalizing homosexuality.
Correct.
In a sense.
And then we also go back to sort of basic cases like Griswold versus Connecticut, which was the main case in 1965 that established a right to privacy. And so that has really been the foundation of all of the Supreme Court cases moving forward that have said, you know, gays and lesbians have a right to privacy in their homes. And some believe it'll even form the foundation of marriage equality in the future.
So landmark cases that we want our candidates to be favorable on and understand and the in relevance to us.
Right.
Well,
and
also,
they can't really say that they would be favorable, but they have to, at least for us, they have to show some kind of knowledge about our issues.
And knowledge is really important, because one of the biggest barriers to GLBT equality in the courtroom is lack of knowledge. For instance, there's no law keeping same-sex couples in Texas from adopting a child, but at the same time, judges in Harris County tend to not know that.
Right.
And so couples seeking to adopt a child will go to Bexar County in San Antonio because the judges know the law there.
Right. So are there questions that are just automatic kick out the candidate? Are there... answers to questions.
We would never kick out a candidate because, you know, they didn't give a correct interpretation of something. I mean, Supreme Court case law is very open to interpretation. But I think it's important for them to go through the process and then to screen with us in person so that we can get a feeling of who they are as a person and how they will perform on the bench. Because really what we're looking for from our judicial candidates and our judges is to be treated fairly and with respect.
So this panel screens candidates, and then they come up with the list. What happens to the list?
So the panel will screen all 62 of the candidates. They rate them on a 1 to 5. We put it through a mathematical formula, come up with a number. The panel then makes a recommendation to the full membership of the caucus.
Okay, so it's not done in a little private room where everybody's kind of... getting together and plotting to take over Houston.
Not at all. No. In fact, all of the questionnaires that the candidates have filled out are completely open to caucus members. We will have booklets put together at the endorsement meeting where you can go through and see exactly what they wrote. All of our panel members who did the screenings will be there to talk about their impressions of the candidates. And it is a very open, we want to be fair, we want to be open, we want to let people know how we reached this determination.
So if this is you and you'd like to complain about the process of endorsement, you get involved, find out what the questions are going to be asked, and come to the meetings and be part of the process.
And just a little bit about the meeting. Because there are so many judicial candidates, we're actually calling a special Saturday meeting on January 30th.
January 30th.
January 30th. That's going to be 10 a.m. at Pecor Hall in St. Stephen's Episcopal Church. That's at West Alabama and Woodhead, 1805 West Alabama.
You know the details like that, huh?
It's my job.
Oh, there you go. So,
and you can also attend the event by going to our Facebook page, which is Houston GLBT Political Caucus, and there is an event there that you can get all the details on and see who else is going to be there with you.
Or you can go to www.thecaucus.org, and the details are on the website.
Very good. Now, if we have listeners out there that want to be join the caucus, is it easy? Is there like a pledge process, or how does one become a member?
No, you just fill out a membership form. It's $40 for a regular member, $20 for a student or a senior or limited income. You can do it on the website. Once again, that's www.thecaucus.org. And if you sign up now and you're a new member, you won't be able to vote at the endorsement meeting, but it's still a great process to watch. It's still good to go and see how it happens. You will be able to vote at future meetings.
Very good. So you were recently reelected as president.
Yes.
What is your vision for the caucus going forward? How do you see the caucus in the next, I guess, the next year or two of your term?
Well, I think that we're happy with the way the elections turned out, obviously, and we're seeking to continue on that victory streak this year and make sure that these candidates that we're endorsing get elected. I would also like to reach out to other communities outside the GLBT community.
What? Outside the
GLBT? I know, it's shocking, but they exist out there. I had a conversation with the head of the local AFL-CIO about starting something called Pride at Work. Pride at Work is called a constituency group, and it is people who are openly gay at work, so they can specifically pursue issues that face the GLBT community at the workplace. We don't have non-discrimination ordinances in Texas or in Houston, so that's something that individual companies, however, can enact. And so we want to help them. We're going to reach out to immigrant communities. Immigration reform is, of course, a huge issue. I think that the GLBT community has a higher stake to play than we think.
I've heard some things about, you know, the endorsements of the caucus and how some elections weren't won. What can we do going forward to ensure that more of our endorsed candidates win? How can we kind of pull together and harness that power?
It's really all about the people we have working. We need more people to volunteer. We're always happy to have more boots on the ground, and that's really where elections are won or lost, or volunteers. And that's what we saw with Anise Parker. She didn't have a big budget paid field program. She had volunteers that were willing to do the work,
and you could tell the difference at the polling stations. The Anise people were screaming and yelling, and the other candidates were just kind of handing out cards.
Absolutely.
So if you are listening and you are somewhat politically active or somewhat politically savvy, interested, the caucus needs you. I'm a member of the caucus, and I'm glad to say we need you to volunteer, because you're exactly right. This is how these elections are won or lost.
And even if you're not politically savvy or not politically involved, this is a good way to sort of learn about what's going on in Houston. You know, we have candidates come in almost every meeting. In fact, I've never been to a meeting where there hasn't been either an elected official or a candidate there. And it's good to have the opportunity to stand there and see these people in person and have the opportunity to ask questions. So even if you think you have no interest in politics, come and be engaged, be part of the civic process, and you might find that it's something that you're interested in.
Now, Chris, how did you get involved with politics, and how did you kind of swing over to be president of the caucus?
Oh, man. Well, actually, I was talking to my grandfather just this weekend, and we were talking about he ran for Justice of the Peace in 1984 when I was 3 years old, and I vaguely remember that election, but it's more... I became more involved. I was a newspaper reporter, actually, for a while, and I covered politics. And after I decided to go to law school, I wanted to get more involved. And so I just started showing up to meetings, and then I started volunteering, and one thing led to another.
What can you say to our listeners to emphasize the importance of local politics? Why are local politics in Houston important?
Well, you know, you look at the national scheme, the national picture, and that's what occupies most of our minds when we think about politics. But these local officials are really the ones that are making the decisions that affect you. For instance, we're endorsing in judicial races. The judges are the ones that decide whether or not same-sex couples can adopt children, whether or not transgender people can change their names to match their current existence. These are the people that really make the decisions that affect your lives. So get involved locally.
I think that's a very good point because, you know, all we hear about is national and even state politics, but the local is where the action is. And so,
and I would say also, you know, it's the politicians tend to start at the local level. So, you know, the whole conservative movement in the 90s was to get these conservatives elected to school boards, local city councils, and then they moved on up the ladder and they moved into congressional seats. So we really need people locally, and we need to sort of build that experience at a local level so that they can then move on to bigger seats like, you know, state reps, governors, congressperson, and so that we then have that representation at a higher level.
What do you think the effect of Anissa's election has on our generation and the generation after us? What do you see that as?
Well, the disparity that we're dealing with right now is that voters have shown that they're willing to trust members of our community, that they're willing to elect members of our community, but they're not really willing to be supportive of our issues. I think it's pretty funny. I mean, not funny. I think it's terrible, actually, that within almost a month of Maine voters in a northeastern supposedly liberal state shooting down a marriage law, that we had Anise Parker, an open lesbian, elected in a southern city. And I think that the next step for the GLBT community is figuring out how to win those referendums and win those initiatives, because that's going to be important to us locally, because we're probably going to face one once we finally get our non-discrimination ordinances and our domestic partnership benefits for the city.
Oh, the future. Oh.
Yes.
If you're joining us, we're talking to the president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, Chris Banks, and the screening committee chairman, Neil Falgu. Is that correct?
Falgu.
Falgu. Yeah. It must be French.
It is.
There's a website for more information.
That's thecaucus.org. And if you want to get involved, make sure to email me at info@thecaucus.org.
It goes directly to you.
Yes, it does.
Anything else we want our listeners to know about the caucus?
Come and join. We'd love to have you.
All right. Thank you very much, boys.
Thank you very much.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites MySpace and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. On Facebook, for example, you can connect to KPFT as a friend, join our fan page, and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley to Facebook users, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFTHouston to join us. On MySpace, KPFT provides event videos, updates, and a lot more. Visit myspace.com/KPFTHouston to add KPFT as a friend. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on MySpace, visit myspace.com/KPFTHouston. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFTHouston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio and KPFT Houston.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending January 16th, 2010.
The much-anticipated U.S. federal court trial testing the constitutionality of California's Proposition 8, known as Perry v. Schwarzenegger, began on January 11th with testimony from the case's two plaintiff same-gender couples. "I've been in love with a woman for 10 years," said 45-year-old Kristen Perry, "and I don't have access to a word for it." Her partner, 47-year-old Sandra Steer, and Paul Latami and Jeffrey Zerillo, each in his 30s, want to overturn the November 2008 voter-approved initiative that outlawed same-gender civil marriage in the Golden State. Latami testified that he and Zerillo haven't pursued fatherhood because they want their children to have the stability and protections that only come with marriage. The opening statement by attorney Theodore Olson, who with David Boies represents the two couples, referenced an earlier U.S. Supreme Court decision that marriage is the most important relationship in life and of fundamental importance to all individuals. Adding to the high-profile nature of the case, Olson represented George W. Bush and Boies represented Al Gore in the 2000 Supreme Court case that gave Bush the presidency. They've said they're working together because the issue is neither conservative nor liberal, but one of fairness and equality. Attorney Charles Cooper, who represents Proposition 8 backers, said in his opening statement that California's domestic partner laws already grant same-gender couples virtually all of the state's marriage rights except the name. He also claimed that it's too difficult to know how lesbian and gay matrimony would affect so-called traditional marriage because the practice is still so new.
Expert testimony ranging from changes in the way society has viewed marriage to the historical discrimination faced by lesbians and gay men in the United States was then solicited by attorneys for the plaintiffs. The headline maker was the deposition recorded last month by Haksheng William Tam, a defendant in the case because he was one of the named leaders of the Prop 8 campaign. He had sent a letter to Chinese American church groups warning that marriage equality was just part of a larger so-called gay agenda that included legalizing having sex with children. He also wrote that other states would fall into Satan's hands if gays and lesbians weren't prevented from marrying in California. The plaintiff attorneys introduced the footage to support one of their arguments in the case, that Proposition 8 is unconstitutional because it was fueled by deep-seated animosity toward a recognized minority. Prop 8 defense attorney David Thompson countered with statements from President Barack Obama that favored civil unions over civil marriage for same-gender couples as an example of how one could oppose marriage equality without being discriminatory.
Chief San Francisco economist Edmund Egan discussed the loss of tax revenue and commercial business income because of the ban. A Columbia University social scientist then testified about the negative impact of the ban on the health of gays and lesbians. He said that the ban contributed to the social stigma that makes gays and lesbians more susceptible to substance abuse, depression, and suicide. A Cambridge University professor also discussed gay and lesbian parenting and how marriage equality benefits the children of same-gender couples.
The trial is expected to take at least 2 weeks. Whoever loses in the non-jury trial, being heard in San Francisco by Chief U.S. District Judge Vaughn R. Walker, is certain to appeal. Most believe the case will eventually reach the U.S. Supreme Court. A ruling there that Proposition 8 does indeed violate the U.S. Constitution's promise of equal protection could overturn all state laws, including voter-approved measures in 31 states that ban same-gender marriage.
2 hours before the trial was scheduled to begin, the U.S. Supreme Court approved a temporary restraining order sought by Prop 8 defenders, which the justices made permanent 2 days later, overturning Judge Walker's approval of televising the proceedings in other federal court buildings and posting video of the trial on YouTube. Prop 8 backers claimed that such coverage would intimidate witnesses who might feel threatened by widespread exposure. The high court split 5-4 along its well-established conservative and liberal leanings. But Lambda Legal's marriage project director, Jenny Pizer, cautioned that the decision was strictly procedural and not necessarily a predictor of a ruling on Proposition 8 itself. But some legal scholars criticized the Supreme Court's decision as highly unusual micromanagement of rules that district courts have generally been allowed to establish for themselves.
In a second queer-related decision late this week, the High Court agreed to hear the appeal by marriage equality opponents of a ruling to allow the public disclosure of the names and addresses of some 138,000 people who signed petitions to restrict the rights of domestic partners in the state of Washington. Voters rejected that November 2009 ballot initiative, but its proponents claim that release of the names could lead to intimidation, harassment, or threats against those who signed the qualifying petitions.
In other legal news this week, the Philippines Supreme Court issued a temporary restraining order preventing the country's Elections Commission from barring the LGBT group Ang Lalad from registering as a political party and fielding candidates in upcoming national elections. The commission denied recognition to Ang Lalad in November because the group promotes immorality. The High Court said it issued the temporary order to allow potential Ang Lalad candidates to be listed on the May 2010 ballot, though they could be disallowed if its final ruling upholds the commission decision.
A Superior Court judge in Washington, D.C. ruled that opponents of the new marriage equality law there don't have a right to hold a public referendum to repeal it. Judge Judith N. Macaluso agreed with the D.C. Board of Elections and Ethics, which twice said that such a move would violate a city law prohibiting a public vote on a matter covered by the Human Rights Act, which outlaws discrimination against gay men and lesbians and other minority groups. Maryland preacher Harry Jackson of Hope Christian Church, who leads the group opposing the new law, vowed to appeal the ruling. City leaders say that, barring a successful appeal or intervention by Congress during the review period it has for D.C. legislation, marriage licenses will be available to same-gender couples around the first week of March.
A psychologist evaluating the man charged in Puerto Rico with brutally murdering gay teenager Jorge Steven Lopez Mercado told a judge this week that the defendant is mentally competent to stand trial. Juan José Martínez Matos is accused of murdering 19-year-old López Mercado in November by burning, decapitating, and dismembering his body before leaving it on the side of a road. Local authorities say prosecuting Martínez Matos under the territory's gay-inclusive hate crimes legislation, which passed in 2002, may be the first use of that law.
The trial of two gay men in Malawi for holding a public engagement party was postponed this week after one of the defendants collapsed in court, according to a report in the Times of London. Tuwangi Chimbalanga, who spent more than a week in one of the African country's most congested prisons, vomited and stumbled onto the dusty court floor just before the case was due to start. Chimbalanga and his partner Stephen Manjeza, who's also been jailed, have each been charged with unnatural practices between men and gross public indecency, which is punishable by up to 14 years in prison. Chimbalanga's lawyers told the packed court that he had severe malaria and needed more time to rest before the case could resume. The chief resident magistrate at the court in Blantyre ordered that Chimbalanga be hospitalized for treatment and adjourn the trial until January 25th.
Elsewhere, police entered an upscale restaurant and club in Beijing on January 15th to prevent the start of a Mr. Gay China contest just hours before it was scheduled to begin. Organizers said police told them that they did not have the proper permits. Contestants in the first ever such event in China, which would have included question and answer and fashion and underwear segments, were to vie for the right to represent China at the worldwide Mr. Gay pageant in Norway next month. It received considerable advance media coverage, even in the state-run press, which earlier in the week ran a front-page story with photos about a gay male couple's wedding ceremony, also touted as a first for China, though such unions are not legal there. The recent relatively positive press coverage seemed to underscore a growing openness about homosexuality in the country. China's first officially sanctioned Gay Pride Festival was held last June in Shanghai, although authorities canceled a few related events at the last minute. The country's first government-backed gay bar opened in the tourist town of Dali in southwestern Yunnan province last month in a bid to boost HIV/AIDS prevention efforts. Ryan Dutcher, one of the organizers of the now-canceled Mr. Gay China pageant, told Agence France-Presse that, "I'm very disappointed, but I can't say I'm very surprised."
And finally, an LGBT advocacy group has rejected a cease and desist demand over the logo in its online coverage of the Perry v. Schwarzenegger trial that parodies the one used by ProtectMarriage.com during the battle over Proposition 8. The original logo of Prop 8 backers featured figures of a man and a woman with two small children. The Courage campaign's trial tracker mimics that logo, but depicts two women and two children. ProtectMarriage.com claims copyright infringement because, their letter charged, the trial tracker logo is substantially indistinguishable from theirs. In a press release, Courage campaign leader Rick Jacobs said that, "We are heartened that Prop 8 supporters now acknowledge that a family of two women and two children are no different than a family headed by a man and a woman. I certainly hope," he added, "that they will acknowledge that fact in Judge Vaughn Walker's courtroom."
That's News Wrap for the week ending January 16th, 2010, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
This is Queer Voices.
Pastor Freedom is with us from the Fresh Start Community Haven Church. Now, the introduction that we have written up that you sent me on the website has lots and lots of letters.
Yes.
So let's explain a little bit about what Fresh Start is.
Fresh Start is a transitional living facility and emergency shelter for homeless or at risk of being homeless, same-gendered loving, GLBTQ, AI, and all the other alphabet that we identify ourselves with. But the bottom line, it's an emergency shelter and homeless transitional living facility for young adults between the ages of 18 and 21.
Okay. Can you say where this is? Is this public or is it?
Yeah, it's public. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely public.
Well, I know
we're located off of Laura Coppy and 59.
Okay.
Which is right out of the loop, 610 loop. It's two exits out of the 610 loop. And we will prayerfully be opening up our doors on March the 20th with what we call a Fresh Start Community Haven Garden Party, where we can introduce Fresh Start to the community, have the community come in and really partake of what we're doing there.
And how are you doing outreach to find out about such people?
We're doing outreach. This was born out of my close association with another homeless shelter, which really focuses more so with straight young men and mm-hmm. young women between the ages of 18 and 21 right down the street from your facilities. And being a volunteer there and working there, we saw a need. And when I say we, the church, which I came to Houston to pastor, Progressive Open Door Christian Center, we saw a need for a place in Houston where specifically SGL, GLBTQ young adults could come and find a safe haven. And so that's how Fresh Start Community Haven was born, but out of seeing that need of being effective in ministry in the community.
Okay, so this the site that you were working at or involved in was not necessarily totally open.
Correct. Especially okay. to our transgendered community. They find a real hard time and hard place trying to find a local facility to go to if, in fact, they're homeless or need emergency shelter. And so Fresh Start Community Haven is the first of its kind in Houston, Harris County, the Trinity Gardens area, and Texas, period. We are first. We are the trailblazers in how to do this. So we're learning as we go.
Okay. So how are you going to be funded?
Well, right now, the church has been raising funds. We're writing for grants. At the current time, we have a grant writer. Her name is Sharon Howard. Our executive director, Lee Sinette, is writing for grants and trying to gather money. So we are in the process of writing for grants, raising some funds from the garden party that's coming up in March. And so right now, really to open up our doors, we're looking at needing about $25,000 more to get our doors open and going.
Now, is there a church associated with this?
Well, it was born out of the church.
Okay.
So the church is a close knit to it. It's still a baby of the church because it's still in its infancy stage. But we want to get it out of the church and let the community own it and make it a community. We want it in the inner fabrics of the community.
Okay.
And so we want the community to really own it and take ownership of it with our board of directors.
Is this sort of like how Bering works with this church and with its Bering Omega service?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yes. The same exact way. Yes.
Now, if a person would like to get some be helped by this organization, do they have to follow what the church says?
No, not at all. They do not have to be a member of the church. They do not have to do anything that the church says. But they will have to follow the rules and regulations of Fresh Start Community Haven.
Okay.
Yes.
And what are some of the services that we're missing in some of the other organizations? You said especially with transgender persons.
Correct. I don't necessarily know if there's any services that are missing outside of the safe place for them.
And
where they can identify and be who I believe God has made them to be. and be themselves, and in that transitional, most vulnerable part or piece of their life, they can find a safe place to lay their head, get food, get shelter, get clothing, and those types of things that they need in order to become productive citizens in society.
So are you just focusing on sheltering and feeding, or are you actually trying to help train or get them, like you said, get them back into society? And how is that approached?
It's approached in two ways. One of our main focuses is emergency shelter for those who need emergency shelter, overnight sheltering, and we're doing that now. So if anybody that needs emergency shelter, we're providing that as we speak. The transitional living facility that we're looking for to open up in March, that's a one-year process, and so in that we're providing case management, counseling and support, substance abuse, preventative services, STD prevention, money management, vocational and employment services, and educational assistance.
And what kind of educational assistance?
If someone comes and needs a GED, because we're targeting a population that is 18 to 24, some may come that have not graduated from high school, some may need some assistance getting into college, and so those types of educational assistance we'll be helping them with.
And how are you going to let people in this population know that you're out there?
By word of mouth, by doing what we're doing this evening, talking about it on the radio, by getting flyers out, by connecting with other organizations that are out there that service the SGL, GLBTQ community.
You know, years ago when we talked about doing this type of work, there was always a concern that we were, the term recruiting.
Gotcha.
And certainly we've come a long way from that, that there are many other organizations that are now working with people that are young.
Yes.
Now, what kind of training do you all need to be able to work in this environment?
Well, I would definitely say, number one, sensitivity training. Gender identification training, and just your basic homeless training on really training how to deal with those who are homeless or at risk of being homeless would be some of the training that the staff would need.
Now, does this also deal with people that are mentally challenged in some way?
I'm almost certain some will come to us that are mentally challenged. Will we have the capacity to deal with that? At the current time, we don't, because one of the things that we've learned is that we can't be everything to everybody. But we will do our best to partner with somebody to say, hey, over here we can't do this, but somebody else in our community can probably help you better in that area.
Now, I'm guessing that you also are probably going to be dealing with probably a higher proportion of people with of color.
Not necessarily. We're open to every race. We're not limited to those who are African American or Negro or however we identify ourselves today, but we are open to everybody that are homeless and at risk of being homeless. Race will not be an issue with our organization.
But I'm guessing there's probably a bigger need, because there may be less of an understanding within the persons of color community.
I wouldn't say so.
No? Okay.
Because most of our, what we have seen, because our church is predominantly African American, what we have seen as the need has come to our church, we've seen it in an African American standpoint. But we, as a whole, when we look at the statistics of those who are homeless and those who identify as same gender loving across the board, I think it's a 50-50 fit for Caucasians and African Americans, and I think it was somewhere around a 2% who identify in other races. So our doors would definitely be open to all who can come.
But the churches, the black churches, probably hasn't been as open or embracing of the GLBT community in general. I'm sure there are some churches that are, but probably there's more of a not being open.
I would say that you can, that because you are SGL or GLBTQ, you are in a sense marginalized because of that. But our church, Progressive Open Door Christian Center, is open to all. We are a radically inclusive and affirming church. And so that's why I think most of the young adults who have come to us and who have tried to find a safe haven have found a comforting place where they can be, again, who God has designed them to be, and find that place
Now, you said, you know, you're open to people even if they're not necessary members of the church or
yes.
completely agree with the church, but there's probably also people who have been programmed to think that the church is against them.
Correct. Yes, we have seen that. There are some that come to our church that believe that the church is still against them, although we try to give an affirming.
Not your church, but
correct,
the church.
Yes, the church overall. The church in itself can find itself being, in the sense of trying to include, it can become a very exclusive place. And so we, in our sense, and I can only speak for us, I can't speak for other pastors, are trying to find a place at the table for everyone to sit down and have a voice and be loved, not because of what we would call the agape love, in the sense of agape love being that you are loved in spite of, but agape love reaches to say that you are loved because of who you are.
I have a question.
Yes.
What is your capacity and how many people can you take at one time into Fresh Start?
When we open up, our emergency shelters opened up to however many people. We can't limit that unless we just do not have any space. Right now, I think we can house emergency shelter-wise somewhere around 20 to 25 people a night. But when we open up in March, we're opening up specifically for 18 young adults between the ages of 18 to 24. We have two houses on 4 acres of land that we just purchased. And so in that, our hopes is to have eight young men and 8 young women per house.
Very good. Now, how did you decide on the location? Was that just part of where the church was? Or
that was part of God's plan. It was not necessarily the church is now located in Third Ward, about 3 blocks from TSU. We were blessed by meeting a young man by the name of Pastor Staggers, Robert Staggers, who pastored a church locally here for 42 years. Kind of what we were just talking about a minute ago, a very traditional Baptist church. And his son died of HIV/AIDS.
Mm.
And so in that, he wanted to give back to the SGLGLBTQ community. And this was a way that we found in our relationship that we could do this. And so hence, one of the houses is named the Eric Staggers House after his son, and the other house will be named the Fresh Start Community Haven House.
If you're joining us, we're speaking to Minister Freedom, is it Gully?
Gully, yes, sir.
Freedom Gully of the Fresh Start Community Haven, which is opening in March.
Yes, our plans are to open up in March, open up on March the 20th via our Fresh Start Community Haven Wishing Well Garden Party. And so right now we are currently selling tickets for $75 per person, and we're just asking the community to come out and support history being made in Houston, because this is actually history being made.
So if we have listeners out there and they know people that may be homeless or are homeless now, they need to... How can they get more information about your program and your church and the programs that are offered?
There are a couple of ways. They can give us a phone call. If you're out there listening, you can give us a phone call at area code 281-903-7399. Again, that's 281-903-7399. You can also go on our website. Our website is www.freshstartch, which stands for Community Haven, freshstartch.org, and all of our information is out there. We're also on Facebook, and our church's website is www.podcc.org.
One question I had, where do most of the people do you think will come from? Will they come from other shelters that are just kind of pushed out, or will they come from the streets?
I believe it would be probably a 50-50 fit. Some will come from other shelters, namely the Covenant House and some other places. I believe that some will come from, we've been getting a lot of calls from the Montrose Counseling Center trying to house individuals, and so we're working closely with them. And then some will come directly from the streets.
So if you're out there listening and you know somebody, get in contact with Freedom.
Yeah, you can get in contact with myself at 281-903-7399. You can contact our executive director, which is Lisa Nett, at the same phone number. Or you can contact our program manager, Sharon Howard.
Yes.
Now, did you get any pointers or tips from other shelters around the country or are you paving some new ground here?
Yes, we've gotten a lot of tips. Number one from Bishop Yvette Flunder, who has a shelter in San Francisco, which is called the Ark of Refuge, specifically for gay and lesbian young people. We've been studying a lot from the Allie Forney Center up in New York, which specifically houses gay and lesbian young adults. And I have to give kudos to a young lady by the name of Rhonda Robinson, who's the executive director of the Covenant House, for which I volunteer. She and I meet every Thursday at 5 a.m. in the morning, and she's been counseling me. She's been with the Covenant House for 25 years now. And so she's been counseling me and guiding me and directing me on how to do this and do it right, in the sense of just basic homeless, taking the SGL, GLBTQ out of it. How do you house and treat homeless young adults correctly? And we just happen to have the spin that we're specifically open for SGL, GLBTQ young adults.
Well, Pastor Freedom, I hope you can come back here once the shelter's open.
Yes,
and
I would
we
love
can
that.
Sort of talk about, you know, once you get yourself established a little bit and see how things are going and how this has affected the community and how hopefully successful this is.
Yes, sir.
And if you missed any of that contact information, you can go to queervoices.org and there's a link to the website. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Thank you.
In today's complex world, filled with complicated instructions like do this, turn here, don't staple, fold, spindle, tape, or mutilate, one way, etc., etc., why not take a break from all of this? Not near a seashore or relaxing in a tropical paradise. Well, the surf's up over at kpft.org. So mouse on over to kpft.org and pledge and renew online. It's easy, uncomplicated, and will give you that warm and fuzzy feeling of having done something good for yourself and your community. So wax that mouse, hang 10, and surf over to kpft.org and renew your membership and pledge online at kpft.org. Thank you for supporting KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace. Mahalo.
The hearts and minds of the world go out to those impacted by the devastation in Haiti. KPFT, your community radio station, encourages you to do what you can to support efforts to help others in the wake of this tragedy. Around the world, people like you are lending assistance. For example, Partners in Health, an international organization providing health care for the poor, is seeking contributions for medical help for Haitians. Visit standwithhaiti.com. to learn more about how you can help. Please stay tuned for ongoing coverage of the crisis in Haiti right here on 90.1 KPFT, including on the BBC News at 7 a.m., on Democracy Now! At 8, and Free Speech Radio News at 4 p.m. Keep listening to KPFT to learn more about aid organizations and how you can support them, and the radio station that provides you up-to-the-minute coverage. Keep the people of Haiti in your thoughts. Thank you for listening to KPFT Houston.
Pacifica is listener-sponsored radio. What does that mean?
Listener sponsorship is an answer to the practical problem of getting better radio programs and keeping them.
A focus on advertisers or the mass audience accounts for the mediocrity of corporate radio.
When listeners support the radio they enjoy, their choices become better.
Listener sponsorship takes control of your radio out of the hands of companies and into the hands of the community.
But maintaining this sort of radio requires you.
Your pledge of support keeps KPFT on the air as a vital community resource.
So call our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314, to become a member today.
You can even go online at kpft.org to make your pledge.
Your pledge is essential to keep listener sponsorship viable for generations to come.
So call 713-526-4000 to support KPFT.
This is commercial-free listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio.
KPFT, Houston.
When you tune in to KPFT, you notice something right away. No ads.
KPFT is a non-commercial radio station. We don't accept advertising or underwriting from businesses, nor does KPFT receive payment for any program we air.
KPFT further disallows product plug-in or endorsements.
We do this because you, the listener, deserve access to the radio you love, without all the commercials, taglines, and cross-promotion that corporate radio subjects you to. If you ever hear something on KPFT that you have concerns about, contact
contact our program director at 713-526-4000.
If you enjoy this kind of option on Houston's airwaves, become a member.
KPFT is able to stay commercial-free because listeners like you make a pledge of support to keep us on the air. Your pledge is important.
Call our membership department at 713-526-4000 or visit kpft.org.
That's 713-526-4000 or kpft.org to become a member.
This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. KPFT, Houston.
Hi, this is Sonali Kohatkar. The Pacifica Radio Archives is the oldest collection of public radio programming in the United States. Within its walls, you'll find a vast collection of voices like Malcolm X, Noam Chomsky, Langston Hughes, Alice Walker, Paul Robeson, Howard Zinn, Gore Vidal, June Jordan, James Baldwin, Jermaine Greer, and many, many others. Visit the new user-friendly website at www.pacificaradioarchives.org, where you can hear samples from our collection in our new Listening Salon section. And you can now order your favorite programs on CD and cassette. Once again, that's www.pacificaradioarchives.org. This is Sonali Kohatkar for the Pacifica Radio Archives.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
I hope that you've stuck around for the second hour of our program because I'm very excited about this interview, and it's actually a roundtable discussion with members of Houston's college GLBT community. And I'm going to introduce them, and then they're going to talk a little bit about themselves. So to my left is Lakia Spady.
Hello.
Hello. Say hello. Jordan Smith.
Hi.
Phil Stout.
Greetings.
And Ronnie Meduja.
Hello, everybody.
And among them, they represent most of the colleges in Houston. We couldn't get everybody because the studio is small. So, Lakia, who do you represent?
I represent Out Students and Allies at HCC Central Campus. There are no other GLBTAs at any of
the Lakia, can you get closer to your mic, please?
Sure.
Thanks.
Or it can get closer to me.
She's getting closer. Okay, so you are the president.
Yes.
Okay. So HCC. Okay, we got that covered. Okay, next on the line.
Again, my name is Jordan, and I am the co-president of Queers and Allies, which is Rice University's GLBTQ organization. Chelsea Smith, no relation, is my fellow co-president.
Okay, so we got HCC, we got Rice. Who's next?
Next is University of Houston. Hello, my name is Phil, and I'm the president of that group.
And what's the name of that group?
The name of that group is Global.
I see. And last, but certainly not least.
Absolutely.
Who do we have down at the end?
And my name is Ronnie Meduja. I'm the president of the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender, and Allied Student Organization for Lone Star College, Cy Fair.
So that's kind of the farthest traveled college, I would say.
Absolutely. I'm here representing the suburbs of
the suburbs area. Yeah, so there are gays in the suburbs.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we have a bunch of people in the studio tonight, and we wanted to talk about kind of the perspective from the college age portion of our community, especially kind of talking about the recent election with Denise Parker. And I wanted to kind of maybe poll each of you and kind of get your thoughts on the election and what does it mean to you and to maybe students at your school and the community in general, starting with you, Lakia.
Well, I know there are a lot of people in our organization who were involved with campaigning, and so there's a lot of excitement in our organization as far as Denise Parker getting elected mayor. I really feel like a lot of people with this election didn't realize there was an election going on, didn't realize that there was a lesbian running, and now that they know, I guess it kind of takes away from all the tension of her sexuality is a big deal because she made it, she was elected, and we have a lesbian mayor, and it's going to be great.
Mr. Smith, how?
At Rice, we sort of got a two-for-one deal.
She went to Rice, didn't she?
Yes, she is. She is the first Rice graduate to be mayor of Houston.
She said that in her speech.
Yep, and a member of our community. So like I said, Queers and Allies couldn't be happier to... to have participated in that. We had several opportunities for members to volunteer. I myself volunteered on the campaign multiple times. So we're absolutely ecstatic. We're slowly taking over the city, actually. Yeah.
Okay, so what's the perspective down the street at U of H? I'm sorry.
Well, at U of H, we were all absolutely ecstatic for Anissa's victory because we had so many representatives from so many different political party political candidates come and talk to us, and then they were asking us for support. And when you give support to a candidate that eventually wins, it's unbelievable, like, how good that feels, that you contributed to something that is going to have a lasting impression for years on your city. So we at U of H were absolutely thrilled to have her as our mayor.
How about Lone Star College in Cy Fair?
I think we definitely had a different perspective on it, simply because we are outside of the city limits. A lot of our students actually weren't able to go out and vote. So I think they really viewed it more of what is Houston going to do. And now that we do have the fourth largest city in America, who is represented by a lesbian mayor, I think it really goes to show how far we've come in our endeavors. But yet we still have so much farther to go. And it's a great platform to really stand on and to move forward with.
Okay, let's explore that. So much farther to go. Lakia, where are we go from here? What's next? What's left on the table? What are we, our next battle?
Locally, nationally.
Let's talk locally because our listeners are local.
Locally, I know there are a lot of people who don't have job security or for their spouses. Like if they need insurance to cover their family, it really can't because of our laws that we have here. A lot of people really aren't optimistic about Texas getting any kind of marriage law protection anytime soon. So I guess really getting our community, getting a new face to our community, getting a more positive face, getting out there and letting people know that we're just like everybody else is really something we need to take on right now.
Okay. Mr. Smith.
I guess at the civic level, a more protection under the law against discrimination and, you know, partner benefits. But I think generally it's a fantastic thing for the city because it lets the rest of the world know how great a city Houston is, and that's the greatest promotion we could possibly ask for. And so I think gradually the political climate and the reception towards our community is going to change as people start seeing how effective Anissa is as a leader.
Mr. Stout. What are the challenges going forward for our community, in your opinion?
Well, the challenges would be, well, first of all, we have to examine that we now have a lesbian mayor of the city of Houston. So that flags Houston as no longer being this state that is so one way instead of the other. So if we take that idea and then basically what I'm saying is now that we have Anissa as mayor, we can expect some great things to happen to our city.
You mean from outside the city? To happen to our city from
exactly
the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Very good, Mr. Meduja.
And I really have to echo what all three have said. I think, like I mentioned before, it's a great platform for us to start on and move forward with. And now that people can actually, or excuse me, people will actually have the chance to see that this really isn't anything about being gay or lesbian. It's about how well you can represent your area. And I really have to echo what Lakia said, especially about, you know, now they'll definitely see.
Now, during the campaign, there were some flyers that came out from some people in a different point of view, mm-hmm. quote-unquote, air quotes, hate mail. How did your specific organization react? How did you react personally? And what did y'all do? Did y'all do anything in response? I'll start with you, Lakia.
I know a lot of people were really offended. Like, whenever they found out about it, like, I'd get a message on Facebook, like, have you seen this? I'm like, yeah, it's kind of horrible. At OUTSA, we really didn't do anything about it. We just really felt like what we had to do was remind people that this isn't about her sexuality. This isn't about, you know, her partner being at her swearing-in. This is about who is going to be, you know, running the city for the next few years and who's most capable for it. So there were a lot of us who were trying to, I guess, take the attention off of what wasn't important.
And I guess we should mention that it was a flyer by Dave Wilson attacking a niece, basically, and asking the question, is this the image that we want portrayed of Houston? And it was a picture of a niece and Kathy at the inauguration. So if you weren't here and didn't get on the mailing list for Dave Wilson, that's what happened. So, Jordan.
Well, I think what we really took solace in is that hopefully this was just the perspective of a vocal minority, and that's ultimately what I think it was. It was just someone who was just trying to ruin the campaign for us and failed, and rightly so. We, like Lakia, we didn't directly address it. I mean, we talked about it at our meetings and encouraged people to keep volunteering as we were, and I think it was really that a combination of people being open-minded about Anise and the volunteer base that she had that got her elected and, you know, led these attacks to be, you know, insignificant in the long run because she was elected, the best candidate won, and woohoo, way to go.
Phil, what did U of H do, if anything, in response?
Well, for this particular ad, it actually was not as popular as a lot of people may come to think, because a lot of us had no idea that this even existed until it spread to us through word of mouth. So I think it was just a last-minute dogged effort to try and sway some voters. But, you know, as you can see, it didn't quite work out that way.
Mr. Medusa.
Out at Sci Fair, I think we kind of had the same effect as Phil and everybody else over at U of H. We necessarily didn't know about it until I'd seen some things pop up on Facebook and on the internet about it. But there were several other different statements that were issued that we got in contact with Lakia at HCC and with a few other organizations, and we all decided to march downtown.
I remember that. When that was after the mail-out came out. And how did y'all coordinate that?
We actually coordinated that through another organization, Equality Across America.
Okay, let's give a shout-out to that.
Absolutely.
That's an important... Lakia, I know you're actively involved.
Yeah, Equality Across America Houston, basically a small chapter of the Equality Across America, which is the group that, I guess, put together the National Equality March that happened in October in D.C. We've been meeting, discussing different issues and how we feel our community should respond to different things that happen. And one of the things, we didn't do anything directly in effect to the mailer, but something else that happened, there was a statement...
It was by the Houston Area Pastures Council's executive director.
Yes. Do you remember what the statement was?
I believe the statement was somewhat to the effect of Anise Parker was not fit to be the mayor of Houston because she was a lesbian. And because of that, we actually found out that our mayor at the time, Bill White, was speaking at a luncheon at the Galleria, in the Galleria area. To this council, so we decided to organize a protest at that location, and we rallied together and got all of our Facebook groups and friends on board. And
so, is this kind of the new age of Facebook and communicating and mass gathering and flash mobs and everybody's tweeting and everything? Is that how the college-age groups are communicating these days?
You know, I really think that Ray Hill really touched on this a little while back whenever he was talking about some of the newspapers that used to come out, the weekly newspapers. And since we don't have those anymore, I think that's the one way for us to be able to get feet on the ground in an intersection within a couple hours, if not a day.
It's like instant mob.
Absolutely.
Now, I want to ask you a question about a student at Langham Creek. I don't know if y'all heard about this.
Absolutely.
He was threatened and then attacked after he got off the bus, after telling students and teachers and principals that he felt endangered, yet nothing was done. I wanted to get your impressions, each of you, and did y'all do anything? Did y'all send out any communications about this, and did y'all mobilize, or what did y'all do?
Actually, I met that young man at a Hatch meeting. He came... shortly after the attack to really talk about what had happened to him, because that's what really happens a lot at Hatch. People come and talk about issues that they have at school and in their community.
Let's give a what is Hatch for our listeners?
Hatch is a group for GLBT youth in Houston. It's very amazing. It helps a lot of young people get through issues that they're having. It's really free-flowing environment. You can come and go as you please, get to know other GLBT youth, and it's really awesome. And that's kind of what the organization did for this young man. Can I say his name?
Let's say his name, yes.
All right, his name is Jaron Martin. I met him, and I spoke with his mother, and she was telling me that she wanted to have a small kind of not so much a vigil as a demonstration at his school. And that happened about 2 weeks after the incident, and it was a silent demonstration, and it was a really cold, rainy, wet day, but we were out there with signs, and like even just the hour, we were there for maybe an hour and a half, and just in that hour and a half, you could really feel that there were some people there who didn't want us there, but we weren't really there for them.
Jordan, did you know about the event?
I remember hearing about it. Was it right around the election or right afterwards?
It was right after the general election, right before the runoff election.
Okay, because we were gearing up for finals mode at that point.
The college kids are all studying.
I mean, it did not go unnoticed, but we didn't do anything in particular for it, I'm afraid.
Now, how about global?
Unfortunately, I can't believe we didn't hear about this. At least I didn't. Maybe we had already stopped our meetings for the semester, because that's usually when we disband, is around final time.
Yeah, and I think it was kind of in the in-between time. And the way I heard about it, there was a report on Channel 11, and it was all over Facebook. And Ronnie, since it was kind of out in your neck of the woods...
Out in our neck of the woods, actually, Lingham Creek High School is located about 3.5 miles from our college campus.
Okay, so you're the epicenter of mobilization,
right,
potentially.
Right, we heard about it through a couple different channels, actually. I spoke briefly with his mother, and I actually, she came to me and asked me, you know, well, how can we get something done about this? Do we need to go directly to the administrators? Do we need to hold a protest rally? What do we need to do? And I put her in contact with Lakia, because at that time, Lakia was more involved with the actual activism role than I was. And from that, Equality Across America, Houston, really put a big push in for that, and quite a few of our members are also associated with EAA Houston.
Now, how big is each of your organizations, so we kind of get an idea of how many people, just roughly? HUC.
HUC. It's membership is so inconsistent, but I would say somewhere between 15-20 people on average.
Okay. How about it, Rice?
A good meeting will probably have about that much. Our Facebook group has, I guess, around 150 people, which is usually the number we like to use.
So non-committal people that don't show up to meetings, basically.
They come to the drag show.
I
so.
See. How about global?
Global, we usually average around 40 to 45 people a meeting.
Ah, so y'all are winning. Okay, how about Lone Star?
Our email disbursement list is up to 211 members as of this morning. On average, to a meeting, we have anywhere from 35 to 40 people show up towards the beginning of the semester. But we have noticed that towards the end of the semester, the membership does reduce substantially.
So if we have listeners out there that are in college, why should they join a gay student organization or association at their respective college?
Because it just really gives you an opportunity to be around people who are really like-minded. Get to know people in the community, get to know what's going on, because I find that, like, there's a lot of people, and they'll come to our meetings, and then we'll be talking about something that, you know, we might have discussed at a previous meeting. They're like, oh, what are you talking about? And we're like, oh, you haven't heard this big awesome thing that's happening in the GLBT community? They're like, oh my god, I didn't know that. So just to, like, keep up with what's going on in the community, it's cool to be around other GLBT people.
Jordan.
I often get approached as to why a school like Rice even needs a group like us.
Y'all are pretty liberal over there.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
yeah.
People aren't getting beaten up, and so why do you exist? And so we really try, since we have such a small student population to begin with, we really try and cater our group towards the allies as well. We engage in ally training through the counseling center with Dr. Winters, which is basically educating employees of Rice or students or even members of the community on some of the more obscure GLBT issues, like trans issues. A good example of this is something I learned through the Ally training and also through the Transgender Summit at U of H this summer about talking to Josephine Titsworth about some of the issues transgender people face with restrooms. And so through Queers and Allies, we were able to get some of the single-user restrooms at Rice made gender-neutral.
Yes, she was actually on our show. So Queer Voices listeners would have heard that interview. But, okay, Mr. Stout, why is it important to be part of a GSA in college?
Well, I think it's important for various reasons, and the reasons will always change depending on who you're talking about. If you're political, then there are tons of political outlets for you to take action with. If you're not into politics and you like the social aspect, there are plenty of opportunities to go out and be social. If you just want to talk to people who are like-minded and network, that's also a fantastic place to go network. I always bring in guests who have careers, who are established. We're established and out people in our community who have a thriving business. And it's very interesting to hear them tell their story about what being gay is like in their respective business.
Ronnie, why? Why is it important?
I think not necessarily geared towards the GLBT issues. I think that just college life in general for a high school student can be either a great thing or a very traumatizing thing, depending on how your first experiences are. I can remember whenever I first started going to Lone Star College Sci Fair. I came to school, I went to my classes, and I went home. I didn't know about anything that happened on the campus. I really didn't know anybody except for the people who were in my classes. And once I did get involved with the GLBTA, it opened up so many different social outlets to me. I've got involved with the Student Government Association since then, on one of their committees, and it really just provides a sense of being, I think, for new college students.
So that's a pretty recent program at Lone Star, I understand.
We were established in 2003, I believe the college was built, and I believe that it was in 2004 that our organization started.
Okay, now let's talk about each individual school and kind of the programs that you have at your school. Like, what can people, HCC students, expect? What kind of events do y'all do throughout the year?
We actually have a lot of really exciting stuff. We're a really, really new organization. We really just started last year.
So, okay. So yeah. Y'all win the newbie award.
Yeah, and like since then we've been really trying to break new ground and really let the campus know that we're here, because kind of like what Ronnie said, at a junior or community college, there's really just a go to class, go home, go to work, you know, like there's not a whole lot of real community at the community college.
Quote-unquote commuter school.
Yeah.
Air quotes. Gotta do air quotes on the radio.
Air quotes, but yeah. So, like, what we really try to do is bring people into our events, bring people into our atmosphere, and let them know what we're about. We had a drag show last semester, which was really exciting.
A drag show?
Yes.
At HCC? Oh, my gosh.
It was great. It was very stressful. I will never put on a drag show again in my life. But it was a lot of fun. And we had a Pride Week. And this upcoming semester, I know we have just, like, small events like LA Appreciation Day and just other, like, really small things. And we had a booth at the Pride Parade. And this year, we're looking to have a booth and a float. So.
Very good. Okay, Rice. What's going on over at Rice?
We have a lot of programming over the course of the year. National Coming Out Week. Transgender Day of Remembrance, World AIDS Day, Freedom to Marry Week, and we try to always have engaging sort of fun activities linked with those. We also do a drag show. Seems to be a bit of a theme.
That's the common denominator in gay entertainment.
Oy vey, yeah. Where we raise money for Hatch doing that. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else in the Ally training program.
I have to give a shout out to Rice's Arch program and Brian Riedel.
Mm.
Very important program, giving back to the community. I'm not shining a light on Rice.
Oh,
I'm
no,
just
no,
saying
no.
That that's
he's my professor, and okay. I haven't done my homework yet. So, if he's
well,
listening.
I'm sure he's listening, and he's been on the show a couple of times. So.
Maybe he'll be nice to me tomorrow.
Maybe not. Mr. Stout, what does Global do throughout the year? I know y'all are pretty active.
Well, Global, we actually end up doing a lot throughout the course of the year, and we do owe a special thanks to Rice University for helping us launch our drag shows. Oh, actually, our first one, and then for the second and third, for this upcoming third one, this will be our third annual drag show in the spring.
There's a collaboration between the two rival schools to bring drag, I guess.
We're not rivals. We're good friends.
We are. I love you, Jordan.
I love you too, Phil.
Oh, okay. Kiss.
Yeah. Anyway, the rest of the events, we also participate in Coming Out Week and Transgender Day of Remembrance, Freedom to Marry. Last week, we had a public display with an actually ordained priest, and we had commitment ceremonies on campus.
Oh, crazy.
It was so much fun. We had that fake apple cider champagne looking stuff with the champagne flutes and everything. It was a wonderful ceremony. And I really, really would like to do something like that again this year, or, you know, something else that's just over the top. And, you know, of course, we're going to have some bake sales and, you know.
Yes, clam bakes at the Cape.
Exactly.
Okay, that was a Legally Blonde reference, so everybody hopefully got that. Nope,
got it.
Ronnie, what are y'all doing out there in Lone Star?
Well, at Lone Star, I think it's a little bit different. One, because we don't have a drag show. Sorry, guys. And two, because we are actually not allowed to fundraise. All of our budget allocations come through the school, through proposed budgets, once a year.
Oh.
So we really have to have things planned a year ahead of time to get the ball rolling. Every year, the last week in March, we hold our Pride Week, which is 1 week long of events every single day, whether it's two events, one event per day. And our main focus on that is educating the campus, the students. We invite the community members to come out. This past semester, we did hold a coming out presentation to where certain members got up and we told our coming out stories just so people can kind of see the things that we go through.
What are some of the reactions you get when you do these forums and you're kind of getting the quote-unquote straight people to know, meet gay people? How are people reacting, I guess, in each school, if y'all do that?
It really just depends. At our forums, we really don't have too much feedback from the audience. If we do, we ask them to write down their questions on a note card, and they are pre-screened because we have had some that were extremely vulgar. But we do go and speak to classrooms every semester. And I've found that the younger generation is much more accepting than I think it's popular. It's believed to be. And I think the one struggle that we have is mainly about religion, but, you know, to each his own, that's...
And U of H, do y'all do forums where you have, like, a gay panel and they...
I actually just participated in one about a week ago for ally training.
Well, there you go.
And we all, well, the students and I agreed that the attitude at U of H is either it's very warm acceptance or it's apathy. We never get much into the negative. It's they either just shake their head and walk away, or it's yay to be gay kind of thing.
Right. Now, do y'all do forums at Rice?
Yes, we do, and really, it takes a lot to phase Rice kids in any
y'all
way.
Y'all are just so liberal and so open-minded.
It's not so much that. I mean, getting involvement is a lot like, you know, pulling teeth sometimes. But our receptions are always positive. We've never really had any instances that would lead me to say otherwise. In recent history, I should say.
How about you, Lakia?
At HCC, during our Pride Week, we did have a few panels going on. And one day, we had designated just, like, for religion, and we had leaders of different denominations coming in and speaking about how, I guess, homosexuality is viewed in their religion and how they personally feel and how they personally, I guess, preach to their people about it. And that was really the only time we really had anybody just who was outraged. This one individual, he pulled me aside and he just gave me a piece of his mind. But he didn't do it in a public setting to where everyone felt uncomfortable, so it wasn't that bad. But that's really the most negative feedback I think I've ever received, and I think anyone else in our organization's ever received. We've had some pretty dirty looks and some pretty people who seem like they're really disapproving, but a lot of them don't vocalize what they're thinking. So
I think the consensus is that the younger generation is more open to homosexuality, and I see a lot of heads nodding, so
there's a group. Absolutely.
It's, you know, and they've said for years that it's a generational thing, and, you know, as society kind of moves along, it'll be adapted. But let me ask you a question, in each of you. Is marriage important to you and to our community? And if so, yes, why? And if not, why not?
Marriage is really important to me personally, because I would like to get married at some point in my life. That'd be great. And I really feel like it should be important, not necessarily like everyone's top priority, like this is what I want. Some people, you know, job security is a little bit more important than that. But I really feel like to be treated like everybody else, to have the same privilege as everybody else, is something that I personally, I'm really, really passionate about, and that I hope other people are really passionate about too, because we're not treated like other people, and that to me is just really unacceptable, and I hope everyone else sees how unacceptable that is.
Now, is a civil union acceptable? And we'll go down the row. Okay, so Jordan, is marriage important to you?
Well, yes, it is. I think maybe 20 years ago, if you'd asked people in our age group that question, they probably would have said no. It would have been unfathomable.
That's my age group, so I'm representing the 20 years ago. Thank you.
But the attitudes towards marriage have definitely changed within our community, and absolutely it's important to me. I would love to be married and to have my own family one day and have all the legal rights afforded to that.
Now, what if you had the legal rights in a civil union? Would that be okay?
Separate but equal? No.
Explain what you just said.
It's calling it something else doesn't change the fact that it's still different. If you call what we have civil unions and everyone else has marriage, why not call it all civil unions? Or why, it seems like a...
Like a second class.
A second class and a really shoddy patch job on something that, you know, is still very important.
Okay, Mr. Stout. Is marriage important to you?
Personally, yes. Marriage is important to me for the reasons that, you know, my co-circle has said.
Semi-circle.
Well, yeah. Semi, if you want to get technical on me.
I'm an engineer, so we have to.
Oh, well then.
Okay.
Then yes, I do believe in marriage for all, and I would like to get married one day, you know, and have a family and all that.
Ronnie.
Absolutely. You know, it's one of those things that it's part of the American dream. You know, you grow up and you have this person that you love and you commit to, and whether you decide to start a family or not, or even whether you want to have somebody you commit yourself to, it's something that heterosexuals are entitled to, whether they decide to produce or not, produce offspring or not. It's something that everybody should have the right to. Absolutely.
Now, let me ask a question of all of you. What possessed you to become president of the Gay Association? Why did you want to be the gayest person in your school? Let's go around the...
Wow, I never thought of myself as the gayest person in my school.
You are the president of the gay group, so therefore you are the gayest one.
I wonder if that's how people say
it. And it's not a bad thing. We're shifting paradigms here. We're changing impression. Go ahead.
My position actually really, it just fell on me. We actually didn't have an official election. The founder of our...
She was doing air quotes.
I was doing air quotes. The founder of our organization, Amblika Williams, she's the most amazing person in the whole wide world. She left. She went to UT in Austin. And
I have to do a boo hiss for that. So I went to A&M, so sorry. We are biased on queer women.
And over the summer, she and I and the person who's now my VP and a few of my other officers, we were working really hard to get stuff rolling for the following semester. And we had our first meeting. At the end of the meeting, we were kind of like, yeah, we don't really have any leadership. And then someone was like, well, Lakia, you can be president. And I was like, really?
kind of by acclamation, it sounds.
Yeah,
like.
And then by the middle of the semester, I was like, I don't want to be president anymore. This is stressful, but I mean, I love it. It's fun. So,
Jordan, why did you want to be president or co-president?
Co-president. If I say president, I'll get a...
Okay, let's go ahead and get into why is there two presidents as of the co at Rice.
Oh, it's always been that way since I've been at the school. We usually have a boy and a girl. Chelsea Smith, again, no relation, is my co-president. And basically, as far as our election, air quotes, was concerned, it was you know, finding people who had been in the organization long enough, who were active enough, and could take on yet another thing to do at school as far as extracurriculars are concerned. And I think we've done a really good job thus far this year.
Very good. Why do you want to be president of Global? Why did you want to be president of Global?
Well, I knew I fit the description pretty well because I knew I was the gayest person on campus. So it was just a... Thank you for that. It was just I have the window people.
We're getting
people
at me. Thumbs up. Yes.
Yeah. And
but that's a big, you know, the gayest person on campus at U of H. That's pretty.
You know, I got those shoes to fill, and I think I do it pretty well.
But you know, yeah.
But for to get more into the serious reasons, when I first started at Global, I was just a general member, and then the next year I was the vice president because I wanted to be a part of an organization that I had, you know, been going to for that whole year, and I wanted to help out. And then when the president was stepping down, and I was terrified to even try and run for that because Melanie Pang was just such a tough act to follow. So a special shout out
to
her.
Rice delegate bowing before. That was awesome.
Melanie. Yeah. Oh, my God.
And Melanie, I can't even hold a candle to, but...
See, I don't even know who this is.
She's amazing.
I'm sorry.
She is.
Actually, I think she came on the show. So she did. Yes, I remember now. Sorry.
Yeah. But... she has given me so much guidance and strength to do this, and I love being part of this organization, and I love being in charge of running everything and setting up the events and being the voice on campus for the GLBTQA people.
Ronnie, why did you want to be president?
It again, similar to Lakia, it was something that just kind of happened. Whenever the semester before I was actually elected the president, we were organizing our Pride Week events, and there were it really didn't seem like much was happening as far as the organization goes. So there were a few members who just stepped up and decided to really take a hold of the reins and go head first into this. You know, we held our general election, and the way that we hold them, you have to be nominated to the position before you can be elected. It was a nomination that came up, and I accepted the nominations, and that was the outcome of the elections.
Well, unfortunately, we're about to run out of time, and what I want to do before we go is I want you to go around and give contact information, email, if you feel so boastful and proud, or a website so people can get in contact with you, the representatives of Gay Houston College Group. So go ahead, Lakia.
All right. Like I said, my organization is Out Students and Allies at HCC. Our email is kind of tricky. I'm kind of upset with who made it, so I'm just going to give you my email address because it's easier, and I read the emails anyway. It's ljspady@yahoo.com. And you can look us up on Facebook, OUTSA, Out Students and Allies, and we're one of the only things that pop up. So,
Mr. Smith.
Again, Facebook is probably the best way to get in touch with us, Queers and Allies at Rice. Or email me personally, and I'll put you on the listserv. My email is jps1@rice.edu.
If you want to get in touch with you, Global at U of H, please send an email to queer Cougs, COOGS @gmail.com, and I will personally make sure that you're added to our listserv.
Mr. Medusa.
And at Lone Star College SciFair, you can email us at scifairglbta@gmail.com.
Well, we've been listening to the representatives of Gay Houston College Groups, and I appreciate you coming on, and I think the future is bright for our city, and definitely with our community. Thank you very much for coming.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. This is Queer Voices.
Who could say which one was chicken, which one egg? So many things get lost, baby. So many things just changing. And you have been so many things to me along the way. I've kept a vigil at your doorway, and I've tried to see it your way. I've cultivated sadness oh so bright on all the sleepless nights.
That was Amy Campbell, a song called This Poetry, from an album called O Heart, O Highway. This is Queer Voices.
In concert with communities around the world, LGBT groups are coming out in support of the earthquake survivors in Haiti. A coalition of organizations led by Canvas for a Cause is raising funds online for the American Red Cross via the website www.gaygroupsgiveback.org. Queer travel companies Atlantis Events, RSVP Vacations, and Olivia Cruises have each pledged $7,500 to the Red Cross, and you can find out about Olivia's free cruise offers for other $7,500 donors at www.olivia.com. The predominantly LGBT Metropolitan Community Church is targeting disaster relief funds to Haitian members of its Dominican congregation and to its HIV/AIDS partner organization in Haiti. Log on to www.mccchurch.org. And the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission is facilitating earthquake relief with other local Haitian LGBT groups. Find out more at its website, www.iglhrc.org. We'll remember an early 20th century musicologist in a Rainbow Minute and have a chat with the indomitable Indigo Girls later in the program. The saga of marriage equality in California did not begin with the May 2008 state Supreme Court ruling that made it legal, and it didn't end with the November 2008 passage of Proposition 8 that made it illegal. In the latest chapter, the constitutionality of the same-gender marriage ban is being challenged in a federal court. Here's how Pacifica Radio News reported the first day's proceedings.
From Pacifica Radio, KPFA in Berkeley, KPFK in Los Angeles, this is the Evening News with John Hamilton. I'm Mark Miracle. The nation's first federal trial over marriage for same-sex couples opened this morning in San Francisco. Federal District Court Judge Vaughn Walker heard opening statements and the first witnesses in Perry v. Schwarzenegger, a lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of California's Proposition 8 banning marriage for same-sex couples. The U.S. Supreme Court this morning blocked plans to broadcast the trial over the Internet, but people around the nation are following developments on a landmark trial that could end up in the Supreme Court. Christopher Martinez reports from San Francisco.
Lawyer Ted Olson opened his case against Proposition 8 by saying plaintiffs are being denied both the right to marry and the right to equality under law. He argues that Prop 8 slammed the door to marriage for gay and lesbian citizens and, in his words, adds yet another chapter to the long history of discrimination they have suffered, all for no good reason. Lawyer Charles Cooper, for the defense, used different language to defend Prop 8, talking about sexual embodiment, socially approved sexual intercourse between a man and a woman, and channeling procreative activity. The trial drew people from around the state.
It's absolutely one of the most important trials of my life.
Shelley Bales of Davis came with her partner of 36 years, Ellen Pontek. They were the second same-sex couple to legally marry in California. Pontek says she was especially taken aback by the arguments about procreation.
Well, I think it was when they started off their side by talking about how marriage is for procreation. I just couldn't believe that they did that. So many couples marry who aren't having children, who can't have children, who have no desire to have children, who are too old to have children, whatever. And that when they said how important marriage is for children, it made us realize, of course, same-sex couples are having children at the same rate as opposite-sex couples. And if marriage is the best thing for children, it's the best thing for all children.
After the opening statements, the court heard testimony from plaintiffs in the case. Paul Katami testified that Prop 8 commercials about protecting children made it seem like he and his partner are a threat to children. But in his words, "We just want to get married." During a break in the trial, lawyer Andrew Puno, one of the sponsors of Prop 8, defended the Prop 8 ads.
We stand by everything that we said in the official campaign statements. A feature of the campaign was that when it comes to marriage and family and sexuality, those are issues that we think parents should be able to discuss with their children. And we made the point that children needed to be protected against interference with that important discussion by having gay marriage taught in the schools.
John Lewis of Marriage Equality USA was one of the plaintiffs in the marriage cases when the California Supreme Court legalized marriage for same-sex couples until Prop 8. He says lots of charges have been made against same-sex marriage and lesbian and gay couples, but now that Prop 8 is in federal court, evidence will show those charges to be scare tactics.
Today, we're commencing a historic trial where evidence will actually show that the freedom to marry is one of those constitutional rights that's guaranteed to all.
Whoever loses in the district court trial will likely appeal, and the case could end up before the U.S. Supreme Court. Despite the conservative leaning of the High Court, Lewis is optimistic.
Described at the top of the Supreme Court of the United States building is equal justice under law. And that's what we're after, equal justice under law. And we know that justice and love ultimately will prevail in this cause.
The trial continues with more witnesses Tuesday and could end up running for two more weeks. Reporting from the federal courthouse in San Francisco, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Hello, this is the actor Michael Emerson. I play Ben on Lost. It's not easy being one of the others, so if time travel or moving the island isn't an option and you're feeling sort of lost, try listening to Greg and Lucia on This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
Rhonda Landowska brings back the harpsichord, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute.
Wanda Landowska was born in Poland in 1879. She took to the piano at age 4 and, once grown, studied at the Warsaw Conservatory. She also took music composition in Berlin and taught piano and harpsichord. Interested in musicology, she visited a European museum with keyboard instrument collections and began acquiring old instruments herself. Manuel Falla composed new works for her to perform, which marked the return of the harpsichord to the modern orchestra. Beginning in 1927, her home in France was a center for the study and performance of old music. During Germany's invasion, her home was looted and many instruments and manuscripts were stolen. Practically penniless, she fled to the U.S. with her assistant and life companion, Denise Restout, and reestablished herself as a performer and teacher. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Parker and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios of WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, John Klein.
The always out and proud Indigo Girls toured the UK late last year in support of their latest album, Poseidon and the Bitter Bug. One of their final stops was Shepherd's Bush Empire in London, where Rosie Wilby, host of the monthly Out in South London radio show, caught up with the lyrical lesbians backstage.
I'm very excited that I'm joining backstage Shepherd's Bush Empire, the Indigo Girls. Hello, Amy and Emily. Lovely to meet you both.
Hi.
How is the UK tour been going?
Really great. I mean, we're happy to come back to the UK anyway before we even got here, so. Yeah.
And the new album, Poseidon and the Bitter Bug, this is your first one that's out on an independent label since the very, very first one, Strange Fire. How does that sort of change the whole process of recording it and promoting it?
Well, it doesn't change. Well, it changes the recording process a little bit. Like, we just had to record for less.
In 3 weeks,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, so we had a lower budget, obviously. And but creatively, we just kind of have always done our own thing, so it was cool. And then promoting it is very different because we kind of use just our own people that we pick, that we think are going to be the right people, and we sort of have a lot of discretion over how money gets spent because it's our money.
Sure.
And it's just different, you know. It's more underground and kind of guerrilla style, and and really counting on indie press and indie media to help us out much more than we would have done in the past. We always like indie press and indie media, but it's almost like sometimes the gatekeepers in a major label world, it's harder to get through those gates. So now, you know, we tend to do more indie stuff. And it's good. And it's appropriate for where we're at and who we are.
And on the album, you collaborate with a lot of great people, Richard Froome, and you work with the Lord. So I noticed Missy Higgins does some backing vocals. How do you know her?
We know her through Mitchell, actually. Yeah, and she was in town and playing while we were recording, and we like to collaborate, so we just, Mitchell was like, you know, should we ask her in to do some vocals, and we like her voice a lot, so we said yeah, and then we did some dates with her, and she's awesome, yeah.
And as in a sort of typical Indigo Girls way, the songwriting credits alternate between the pair of you on the album, and you stick to that formula very much live. There'll be one song, one Emily song, very often. Are you genuinely equally prolific, or does one person write more stuff and you end up having a bunch of stuff you don't use, or
does that work? I think you're more prolific now, but it goes in waves. I don't know. I don't feel prolific anymore.
Oh, okay. Being openly gay has affected your career. Has anyone ever advised you to sort of be less open about it? Or, record labels do have these funny ideas about how women particularly are meant to be packaged in the music industry.
Yeah. I mean, they obviously had no idea how to promote us, or we weren't a band with an image. We just always were who we were.
Mm-hmm.
But we never really gave that any thought. I mean, I think it's true that you can get pigeonholed as a lesbian folk band or whatever, but the more important thing is that we've maintained this really loyal and true following, and it is because we are who we are, and we're open about our lives. And and early on, the lesbian community was so supportive of us, you know, gave us a boost, and then the audience became larger and more diverse. But in terms of, you know, being able to be imaged or marketed in any sort of massive way, that wasn't going to happen for us, you know. And there was definitely homophobia and prejudice along the way, but it never stopped us from writing what we wanted to write, making the records we wanted to make. The record company never spoke of our sexuality, at least not to our faces, or tried. You know, we wouldn't have had it. We wouldn't have. It wouldn't have been worth having being signed with a record label that had anything to say about that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that was never an issue, and now it's just so grateful to just be part of the movement. There's a lot of work left to be done, and we're just happy to be out and play music as being who we are.
And how do you think of the sort of political landscape in the States is at the moment? How do you think of Bob is doing?
He's got so much work to do, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, right now people are, I think some people are frustrated with him. Mm. He's not working fast enough for them, but I don't really feel that way. I feel, I really respect him. I mean, he's incredibly honest. Like, maybe even to a fault, because he's, you know, constantly admitting that, like, I've got to figure this out. He's just such a respectable, good man, and I trust him. I'm having some issues with the war in Afghanistan, but I'm not. But I think he was handed that.
Yeah,
I'm not blaming it on the Bush administration. It's a legacy of time.
Yeah, sure.
It goes so far back that it's not. I mean, you know, we could talk about that for days. But yeah, and there's a gay. You know, there's some gay issues and some queer issues that he's working on. But
gay marriage.
It's not as high of a priority as the economy and healthcare.
Sure.
And the war, and some people are frustrated with that, but I'm not, actually. I want him to get the healthcare thing and the economy going. And,
sure. And then sort out.
Yeah, because I think he's going to make those decisions, and he's already changed the whole profile of who we are as Americans and how people feel about us. And Clinton has too, Hillary has too.
Yes.
And it's just great, you know. I just feel super positive about it still. Mm-hmm. So.
And going back to sort of sexuality, do you feel it's easier to write songs when you're happy and in love or when you're out of a relationship?
Depressed. Trauma.
Yeah.
It's always easier for me.
Always easier. Can I ask, are you in relationships at the moment with people?
Yes. Yeah, I've been with the same person for almost 8 years. And I actually find being in a relationship is good for me. My relationship is sort of my muse, and that's whether it's going through hard times or good times. So I used to think that being single, because I was single for a couple of years and celibate and very like intentional about it, and I did create quite a lot. But then I was like, I don't have to stop doing that just because I'm with somebody.
No.
You know, and I think it was because the relationship I was in before that was so terrible that I just couldn't create at all. It wasn't, you know what I mean? I just felt like paralyzed by it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'm going to be in relationships with people that are like co-conspirators in the act of the journey of art, you know.
Okay.
And that's what I'm with now. You know, I'm with someone that is like a co-conspirator. I mean, we don't work together on art, but she does art, I do art.
Her own stuff.
We support that journey. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, I wish you all the best of luck with the rest of the tour.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The album release. Thank you.
Thank you.
With production assistance by Sella Wright, Rosie will be chatted with the Indigo Girls backstage at Shepherd's Bush Empire in London. They're touring the southeastern U.S. during the next few months. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Tanya Kane Perry, Christopher Gall, Michael Emerson, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns with John Klein, and Rosie Wilby with Cilla Wright contributed program material. Thanks also to Mark Miracle, Christopher Martinez, and Pacifica Radio News. The Indigo Girls performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is only made possible by our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, listen to our podcasts, read the text of this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alert, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038. USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on Fresh FM, Nelson, New Zealand, WPSU, University Park, Pennsylvania, 2XX, Canberra, Australian Capital Territory, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, and Jack Valensky, with contributing editors Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. The music heard on this program is provided by J.D. Doyle, who also contributes to the audio file segment of This Way Out and who produces Queer Music Heritage, which is an hour-long feature of Queer Voices the fourth Monday of every month. For more information, visit J.D.'s website at queermusicheritage.com. And listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.